I came across the following story about inventor Thomas Edison. Thomas Edison's grade school teacher apparently sent him home with a letter explaining that Edison wasn't allowed in school any longer. Anxiously, as a young boy, Edison ran home, took the letter and gave it to his mother, and asked his mother to read the letter out loud. His mother's eyes filled with tears as she began to read the contents out loud. She read, "Your son is a genius. This school is too small for him and doesn't have enough good teachers to train him. Please keep him home and teach him yourself." Now the story continues that many years later, Edison's mother passed away. And of course, at this time, Edison is considered a genius, known for hundreds of inventions. But feeling nostalgic, he looks around one of the old desks in his home, and lo and behold, what does he find? That written letter from his grade school teacher to his mother. But now Edison can read. And this is how the letter actually read. "Dear Mrs. Edison, your son is addled, mentally challenged. We won't let him come to school anymore. Please keep him home." The story is an inspiring one and shocking, but I have to reveal to you, according to historical sources, it seems a bit exaggerated and fabricated for our enjoyment. But what sources do verify is that Edison's mother did hear that the school wouldn't provide adequate education for her supposedly challenged son, and she refused to let someone else undermine her child's potential or tell her what her child was capable of. And she is quoted as marching back into that school and telling the teacher that she was capable of providing her child with an education herself. Years later, Edison said, "My mother was the making of me. She was so true, so sure of me. I felt I had something to live for, someone I must not disappoint." And when I came across this story, pieces of it fact, pieces of it fiction, it reminded me of an often forgotten mission of parenthood, which I believe is to inspire our children to find their own way in this very complicated world. In other words, explore what it is that makes our children light up from within, and then be their advocate, discovering all unexplored avenues that will guide that child to become the best version of themselves. And we know that that's easier said than done. In 2011, Amy Chua published the controversial book Battle Hymn of the Tiger Mother. Chua explains that she was raised by strict Chinese immigrants, and her parents' antidote for working one way up the ladder in America was be strict, be disciplined. Chua writes, "We got in trouble for A minuses, had to drill math and piano lessons every single day. No sleepovers or social engagements, no boyfriends. But I believe that my parents having high expectations of me, coupled with love, is the greatest gift I've ever been given. That's why I tried to raise my own two daughters the same way my parents raised me." Now I have to tell you that while I certainly agree that discipline and structure must be present, and of course, coupled with love, I still think that we as parents, that we as mentors, are more focused on the standardized test scores, the college applications, and even the date that our child learned how to walk, instead of focusing on what it is that makes our children tick. What is it that makes our children beam from ear to ear? What's the conversation piece that will keep your child talking for hours? How well do we know our children? And perhaps an even more difficult question to ask ourselves: are we willing to take the steps to help our children learn about themselves? Not take the steps in order to create the child that we always wished for, but take the steps that create a path in which our children experience the destiny they were meant to achieve. We see a mismanagement of parental expectations in our Torah portion this morning, in the famous story of the binding of Isaac. It's often that we speak about Abraham's faith, that when God says, "Take your son, the son you love, take Isaac up the mountain and sacrifice him," Abraham says, "Hinei me, I'm here." But there's one character, I don't know if you've noticed it or not, one character whose voice we don't hear in the story, and that's the character of Sarah. And it's hard for me to believe in this story that Sarah sits as a quiet, vulnerable, meek voice. Because remember who Sarah was. Sarah was the first person that laughed out loud when she heard that she was going to conceive Isaac at such an old age. This was the same Sarah when she saw Ishmael tormenting Isaac, her baby. She banished Ishmael and Hagar here in this story, right in this week's Torah portion. This was not a meek lady. And I found that the Midrash agrees with me. You see, at the same moments that Abraham woke early and took his son up Mount Moriah, what the Midrash says is that a dark angel came to visit Sarah. And this dark angel disguised himself in the garbs of Isaac. So imagine a mother having this nightmare, that her son comes to her in a dream, again, a terror, a night terror. And her son says the following: "Mom, my father took me, and my father built an altar. And I need you to know that he grasped a knife to cut my throat." And as you can imagine, before this angel dressed up as Isaac could finish the story that we tend to think has a happy ending, Sarah's soul leaves her body and she dies, presumably of a broken heart. So certainly a broken heart because she imagines the loss of her child. But I also believe it's a pummeled heart because it's a mother imagining a father that's using her son, using his son, as a pawn in order to achieve his own dreams and ambitions. Now the text conveys that after the Akedah, after the binding of Isaac, Abraham and Isaac's relationship is destroyed. That's not hard to imagine. We talk about this being Abraham's test. But I think it might have been a test of fatherhood. Here Abraham was asked to take a 3-day journey. Would he take a 3-day journey up a mountain, holding his son's hand, asking him questions, learning about his hopes and desires in this world? Or would Abraham blindly lead this boy up the mount with an intent to kill? I think that we're given a gift here. We see a darker side of Abraham so that we can learn the mistakes of our forefathers, so that we too can take a different path, often the path less traveled. I recently met with a bar mitzvah family, and it's always my custom in those meetings to ask the following question, a question that I think is usually a light one. And I asked the parents to look at the child and explain to the child what their vision is for them in this upcoming bar or bat mitzvah year. And for the first time, instead of the parent addressing the child, the parent addressed me. The wise, intelligent mother looked at me and said, "I've learned not to place my own expectations on my child. Rather, it's my job to help guide him in the fulfillment of his own expectations." And I thought it was a beautiful answer. It means that our job as parents and our job as mentors is to lovingly nurture our children so that they learn how to place expectations on themselves, to help our children realize that they each hold an inner spark that deserves to be kindled. I truly believe there's a difference in wanting more for our children than wanting to be the architect of our child's path. A story for all of you. Dr. Martha Beck was halfway through her PhD program when doctors told her that the fetus she was carrying held an extra 21st chromosome, that the baby would be born with Down syndrome. And so Dr. Beck had the baby, and she named the baby Adam. She said she named the baby Adam because she remembered that Adam in the Garden of Eden disappointed God, and she knew that this son would probably disappoint her, that this child couldn't possibly measure up to those little boys and little girls that are born in which parents place every dream, every hope upon. But one day, Adam turned 7. And Dr. Beck took Adam to the dentist's office, and the dentist explained that, look, Adam, he's doing an okay job brushing his teeth, but his molars, because of Adam's low muscle tone, he's unable to brush as well as he could. And so the dentist, at that interesting moment, said, "I happen to be selling a product. I'm selling a very expensive electric toothbrush, but I think it'll help Adam achieve his goal." And so Dr. Beck, being the mother she was, said, "How could I not buy this $100 toothbrush?" She bought the toothbrush, went home, and taught her son how to brush thoroughly. She left him for a split second in the care of her daughter, Elizabeth. And the moment she left, she heard terrifying screams and yells coming out of the bathroom. And Dr. Beck ran right back to the bathroom and said, "Lizzie, what's wrong? What's wrong with Adam?" And Lizzie looked back at her mom and said, "Mom, there's nothing wrong with Adam. Adam is just overwhelmed with joy." It was in that moment that this mother, that Dr. Beck, realized that our expectations may not match our children's. But guess what? She realized the lessons that our children teach us, they're often much better, much richer than we could ever imagine. And so, right after that, what did Dr. Beck do? She went back to the dentist's office and bought 20 $100 toothbrushes. The Torah teaches us that peace comes into our home when our children are guided on the right path. And so I pray for all of us this morning, whether we're parents or mentors, may we help our children find their way, not because we physically placed them there, but because our hearts and our hands guide them, nurture them, because we choose to listen to them. Let us make the decision to learn what it is that helps our children shine from within. Because I truly believe if we are successful, I think we'll find it's our children. It's our children lighting our way. Shabbat Shalom.